Hello, and welcome to another episode of Point to Point. It's the show where I drive from one point to another and try to get to the point. Today's episode is a very special long episode, I think. I have to go to a different office today, so we're going to a different state. So let's buckle up and have some fun. Today's point, I guess more of a question, really, if you think about it, comes from the Discord. If you would like to ask, posit some questions or some topics for the show, I am all ears. I've done, I think this is episode 42, 43, it's been fun keeping up with it. But if you have some stuff that you think would be a good topic for the show, hop into the Discord. The links are in the show notes. This one, I think, comes from Eric. Hello, Short Game Long Talk, Eric. Nice to see you again. Today, the point, question, topic, thought is kind of my gaming history. Like, why did I get into games? How did I get into games? And where does it all begin? I feel like there's a lot of different ways that this can go. But I guess we'll start chronologically, and I'll kind of tick through some of the big hits. Memory is a bit hazy as it goes, so I might get some of these out of order, but hey, that's fine, right? We'll figure it out. I will say my gaming history generally begins with the PC, it begins with the Game Boy, and it also kind of sort of begins with the PS1/N64. I think, and I, like I said, memory's hazy, so I need to like kind of get this together. But for some reason, I feel like I had a PlayStation 1 before I had an N64. It all kind of mishmashes around when I was about 7. So I had the original Game Boy with Tetris. And I had some fun with that. And then I had Super Mario Land, I think, is what I ended up playing on that for the most part. And then loosely after that, I got an old Acer, I guess it was new at the time, an Acer PC. And it was my first desktop computer, and it was the canonical, this computer goes in the computer room computer. And there were some games on there. I remember I had the Lego Island, maybe is what it's called. That is a game I've thought about doing more with in the future. But I remember loosely kind of playing a Lego game on there. And for some reason, I have this image of the image of a Lego man with a pizza just seared into my mind. So I think that's Lego Island. And then after that, I had, the real PC game, real heads will know. My favorite PC game for the longest time, even though I was just abysmal at it, was the Microsoft Encarta disc. Because here's the thing, Mind Maze, the like trivia labyrinth in that game, was just cool. I've also wanted to go back and play that because I've seen that there's ways to do that. But Mind Maze is where it's at. I had a blasty blast playing that. And if you don't know what it is, you should look it up because it really is just like it's funny because it's a first person kind of point and click game, but the point and click part is answering trivia questions and then clicking on doors and stuff. It's a little rogue, it's a little, just like missed, I guess, but it's just all trivia, which is, it's fun. I have fond memories of that game. I can't tell you if it's good or not, but, it was a fun time. It was one of the more formative game experiences I had on that computer. I also kind of fell in love with Roller Coaster Tycoon, on that good old computer. And that was a blast as a youth. You don't know how to play that game. So the way you play that game is you make insane roller coasters and then chop out a segment and see how far you can fling the roller coaster cars. And that's mostly how I played that game. A lot of games when I was 7 to, let's say, 15 involve immense amount of destruction against the rules of the game. We will talk about NASCAR on the N64 in a little bit. So yeah, I played the PC Roller Coaster Tycoon. There are a couple of other like game compilations that I have memories in my head of it. Like there's a real like fisheye lens guy mugging for the camera with a silly hat. I think was like a math related compilation game. I think there's like a Marble Madness thing in there or something, but it was mostly just like loose games. I was very much a Lego kid at that time, so most of my fun was in playing Legos or making grand armies out of my Risk pieces and still never having played Risk for real. So yeah, I kind of played around with that stuff, but gaming was kind of just like a secondary thing to me. Like I was very much a play with my Legos or watch Space Jam kind of kid, and then I played some computer games and some Game Boy games from time to time. Around that time, somehow my dad was able to get a hold of a modded PlayStation 1. So I had never touched a PlayStation before then, and then he shows up one day and says, "Hey, check this thing out." And I have, again, very few memories of playing that PlayStation, but I do remember that there was either a binder of CDs or just one CD that had a shitload of games on it. And I think I mostly spent my time playing Warhawk, a game that I have very little recollection of. I remember it being a thing that I think on in a funny way whenever I play Ace Combat. It was that game. But yeah, I had a weird modded PlayStation 1. And I think maybe the thing here to add is that my dad is not a video game person. I don't know where these things came from. I really don't have an idea of why he got the PlayStation from our neighbor who had a modded PlayStation. Or like where the Game Boy came from. Like I still have the original gray DMG Game Boy, and I don't know how I got it. It's kind of like a weird thing because like my dad never really played games. Like there was a Genesis in the house, and I played Sonic 2 for a while, but I mean I rarely got out of Green Hill Zone Sonic 2. But yeah, I don't really know how all of this game stuff came into my life. And then kind of the next kind of phase, I guess, after that was around the same time my parents split up, and then the, you know, all of that fun stuff. And I think the weird, hey, this bad shit's going down, here's a thing to take your mind off of it, was Pokemon Red and Blue. And it is Pokemon Red and Blue because in the ever-escalating newly divorced arms race, it means that my parents are very territorial over stuff. So when my dad bought me the lime green Game Boy Color, it was not really allowed to leave the house or like leave, you know, his custody. And the same kind of deal. So my mom ended up getting me the blue Game Boy Color, the like aqua blue one, which I still have. And that one was the same deal. But I got blue at my dad's house and red at my mom's house, and I played them kind of concurrently. I still have the glue falling out Prima guide for Pokemon Red somewhere. I should probably go find that. So the kind of benefit here is that I had both of the games, and then I was able to play them concurrently and kind of get different starters and all of that. And then at some point, when I got the fun accessory package of the teal Game Boy Color carrier thing that has a Pikachu embroidered on it, I also got a Wurmlite, which matched my blue Game Boy. And I got a Link cable. And this was the great revelation. Because as the rules kind of laxed at my family's house, those Game Boys started to travel a bit. And so I played Red and Blue, and then the blue cartridge I still have became my primary Pokemon game. And I basically, like, used all of the stuff I had in Red to get the other legendary birds and kind of all of that stuff. And then I ported almost all of those, like, special Pokemon over to my blue setup. And I ended up playing that. And then as time progressed, you know, Gold and Silver came out. I got Silver. And then my original starters and everything were all transferred to a Silver cartridge. And I kind of maintained that through Silver and Gold. And then I let my cousin borrow my Silver save, and he wiped it. So, you know, so it goes, I guess. But yeah, so I was a big Pokemon kid up to the second generation, and then I kind of just fell off. I never made the jump to a DS. I also kind of, around that same time, I got the N64. I had all the hits. I had Super Mario 64, Star Fox 64, Star Wars Shadow of the Empire, a game that I never got past the first level in, Star Wars Battle for Naboo, the game everyone remembers, and NASCAR 96, 97, I can't remember, a NASCAR game, because guess what, my dad was a big NASCAR head too, big into motorsport. Not the kind that I enjoy now, but, you know, he was a big NASCAR head, loved Dale Earnhardt, and Dale Earnhardt, I think, was definitely in the roster, but he might have been on the cover, and I don't remember. So I had that for my N64. And this is kind of where my gamer cred, I guess, is about to be called into question. So I played Star Fox. Star Fox is one of the only first-party Nintendo games I've ever finished. I really like Star Fox, actually. It was a good game. I liked the branching path, and I've always kind of meant to go back. I think I started it on NSO a while ago and just never picked it back up, but I love Star Fox. I wish that they made another one of those. I should go back and try some of that other stuff. But this is also the renting time, right? Like, this is when you go to Blockbuster and rent some video games. And I rented Ocarina of Time. I've loaded into other people's saves in Ocarina of Time, but I've never actually played Ocarina of Time. I ran around the Kakariko Village section and swung a sword, didn't understand Z-targeting, and had to return it the next day. So my time with Zelda up until Breath of the Wild really has been, I have not played these. I played a little bit of Link's Awakening when the, like, chibi style remake came out, but other than that, I've never really touched them. And the same for Mario. So I played the first couple bits of Mario in Mario 64. My favorite level in Mario 64 is the start screen when you can pull his cheeks. And then I think I jumped into some paintings, but I have, you know, less than, we'll say, 10 stars in that game, you know, grand total. And then again, like, I never picked up another Nintendo console until the Switch. So Mario Odyssey was my second Mario game, besides the time I spent playing Super Mario Land on my original Game Boy. And then I kind of moved from that to Battle for Naboo, which is, I guess, it's like a Rogue Squadron, but not, like, none of the good Rogue Squadron-ness. And that was an alright game that I also don't have any real deep memories of finishing. I remember that it was, like, one of my first real loves of playing a spaceship game. Like, I love a good third-person spaceship game, and that was probably the first I had. But yeah, my N64 was, like, I played Smash with friends a couple of times and never really got it. I think I remember playing Mario and Sonic Go to the Olympics or whatever once, but my N64 days and kind of my early PlayStation days are mostly non-existent. I never really branched out that far. The part where games kind of hit me was with the PlayStation 2. So I saved up enough lawn mowing money and bought myself a PlayStation 2 and spent a lot of time playing that in my mom's basement. And that's kind of where I fell in love with a lot of the, I guess not at the time, but Sony first party stuff. So like, I loved the Ratchet and Clank games. Those were like instant gets for me. I played the first three of them and kind of played through them multiple times. I had like all the leveled up guns and all of that stuff. And then speaking of third person vehicle games, the other game that I remember buying at like a PlayStation Greatest Hits bargain bin at Walmart or something was the Rockstar game Smuggler's Run, which, it's not, I mean, it's not great, but I remember it had dune buggies and stuff. I will say, I think Smuggler's Run is the Rockstar game that I like the most. I played a little bit of GTA, but this is still like early teens. So my GTA experience is, you know, having the Blockbuster cheat codes manual and then typing in some cheat codes to get rhino tanks and do no-fly jumps over the closed bridges. Like, I never engaged with the story of a GTA. But yeah, I feel like my time was mostly spent with Ratchet and Clank and games like that. And really, the nostalgia I have for like missed games are primarily from the PlayStation 2. Like the games that I think about a lot that I wish that I would have played are more Armored Core games. I wanted to really get into the Ace Combat games, more on that later. But the thing that I always really want to get into, and there still isn't like a really good way to do it without me buying a PlayStation 3, is I really want to play the Sly Cooper games. Like, really, really want to play them. But I just have never put the effort into doing it, and it might just be a wait until emulation gets to like good PS2 emulation and then do it. Around this same time, the parental arms race is still occurring, and we arrive at one of the, if there is going to be a top 10 or top 5 most influential Phil games, we arrive at the first one, and it is my dad buys me an original Xbox. Again, I don't know why. I really don't think I had any like recollection of wanting to get an Xbox, but I got one. And with it is a little game by this not super well-known Canadian studio called BioWare. And it is Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2. And these are kind of foundational games to me and my taste in what I like in games. So you probably know what KOTOR is. They are CRPGs that are Star Wars. They are like Old Republic, so they are like several thousand years before the main trilogy. It's kind of that perfect Legends canon now, where, you know, there's a secret Jedi and you have to level up, and I think it actually uses D&D 3rd edition as like the actual background system that it's working on. But there are like story-based RPGs that have dialogue choices and branching paths to some degree. You have like choices at the end of each mission that will kind of determine if you're good or evil, etc. And these are games that I just absolutely loved. It's also a series that I think is the origin of one of my weird gaming quirks, which is I played each of the KOTOR games all the way through, I think, 6 times, because there is the so that my playthrough setup for almost all BioWare games up until, I think, Mass Effect 3 was you play the good ending, the bad ending, and the like neutral, what you would actually choose ending for both male and female characters. Because BioWare, you know, probably upon revisiting did a bad job of this, but at the time, BioWare was having like some slight differences in dialogue choices between the gender of the characters and then also you know, you had different dialogue options for, like, I'm going to do the evil shit or I'm going to do the nice guy thing. And so that was kind of my MO for these games. And they lasted me forever because those are 40-hour RPGs that you're playing six times. And I still think very fondly on KOTOR. I've been listening to A More Civilized Age, which is something that will come up in this future episode of 70% Complete. And that... They are going through KOTOR too right now, and I'm having the itch again of like, ooh, should I get this? Because I already have the first one on PC. Like, should I just get the second one and mod it all to hell and have a good time? So I'm thinking about it. We'll see what ends up happening. But the so I played those, and those were like seminal works in like what makes up my taste in games, which we'll get to in a little bit, because that continues to evolve in this direction. And then it's also where I played Halo 2. So I never played Halo 1, but I played a lot of Halo 2. I played a lot of FIFA on that Xbox, which was interesting because I had my first... I was never a football kid. I got Madden, I think, on the PlayStation 2, but I was never like a big football watcher. But soccer was something that I did as a kid, and it became something that I really enjoyed. So, you know, I became a Manchester United fan in the halcyon days of the early 2000s. So yeah, I played that stuff on there. This is also kind of the time when I'm starting to branch out into weird kind of first-person shooters. This is where I played a game that I've talked to Logan about a couple of times now called Pariah, which I don't remember much of. It's just kind of a mid-tier first-person shooter, I think. And then it also is the time when I started getting into like other first-person shooters on the PlayStation, so kind of bouncing back and forth here. But this is my introduction to Call of Duty and Medal of Honor, right? Like, I have fond memories of playing the first couple Call of Duties. Medal of Honor, Frontline, and Pacific Assault were like big, action-packed, like World War II games that I really enjoyed playing at the time, and I never really touched the multiplayer. Both with that and like we had fun in Halo 2 multiplayer, just, you know, having rockets and warthogs and stuff. But that was all local. I never really played online with any of this stuff. But I kind of like evolved from there into the Xbox stuff where, you know, I started playing like RTSs on the computer, or I started playing CRPGs a little bit more. And I think if my timeline is lining up here, this is also around the time that my mom remarried, and her new husband was really big into computers. And he had this, still has, actually, it is still in a box in the basement, which I find hilarious, an old Gateway. So he had an old Gateway computer, and on it, he introduced me to the Age of Empire games, which are still some of my favorite old RTS games. So I played a bunch of Age of Empires 1, and then when Age of Empires 2 came out, we played a shitload of that. This is also my first introduction to, I think, playing games and having some access to the internet to look up console commands and cheat codes. So I would look up some of these, and then you get the fun, like, astronaut enemy who drives around in, like, a 1950s car, and you have the just drop nukes everywhere, like, all that good stuff. Is where I started playing with that. And then that kind of developed into Age of Empires 1, Age of Empires 2, and then it turned into Rise of Nations was another one that came out around then, I think around the time I was playing it, which is another RTS, but it's kind of like Civilization, except instead of tiles, it's all kind of direct control RTS, and you kind of, your technology tree is literally going up through the technology ages, which was fun. And then there's also other games like, what was it called? Art of War, I think, is what it was called. The Art of War Cossacks edition is what I, what my brain is thinking, which is another direct control RTS, but it was like incredibly beautiful Napoleonic direct control RTS, and it had formation controls, so you could make giant star forts out of walls and everything, which is what I spend most of my time doing in the map editor. And then you had formation controls, so you could have all of your pikmin or your musketeers join up in like a square formation or a line formation. And I had a lot of fun with that, because if you know anything about me, Napoleonic conflict, and I just love me some frock coats. And that was probably the beginning of that, if I had to guess. But I really enjoyed that game, because it allowed for a lot of creativity and kind of playing around, especially with, you know, a guy who likes Age of Empires, like my stepdad. You know, you can kind of expect him to also like World War II movies, or movies like Gettysburg, or, you know, things like that, like Napoleonic era or Civil War era conflict movies that have like a lot of really interesting looking fortifications and stuff that you can build in Art of War. And then that's kind of like the end of my PC gaming experience for a while. Like, I would still chase the RTS here and there for the most part. Like, I played the Red Alert games. The last one that I ended up playing was Generals, which was really good, and I enjoyed that. So I kind of followed this RTS path for a bit. And then Age of Mythology, right? Like, Age of Mythology came out. I was in middle school, I think, because I remember I won a short story writing contest with a short story I wrote about the main protagonist of Age of Mythology. I fucking love Age of Mythology. I played the remake, retold, or whatever, a little bit, and that game kicks ass. I love that game. You should go play Age of Mythology if you like RTS games with like a little bit of whimsy to them. It's a fun time. And then I also started to get into more like tactical games at that time. So I remember playing a game called Silent Storm, which I thought about going back to, actually. But it's a turn-based tactics game, kind of like an XCOM. But it's set in the, like, an alternate history World War II, like, late 40s, I think. And it's all about, you know, guess what? The Nazis have mech suits and stuff. And you're kind of going up against it, and you're picking your weapons, and it kind of all lines up with the World War II craze that was going on in video games at the time in general, which I kind of mentioned, because this is probably a journey I will go down at some point, and it's about how, you know, I start this episode by saying memory is really bad. My memory is not great of these early times, but my memory of things in video games is very good. So the like combination of World War II weapons and systems and all that stuff in Medal of Honor games and in Call of Duty kind of translate over to this tactical stuff, where like I remember what the well rod is, and I know how that works, and I can kind of, you know, picture what that is and what character uses it and everything. And that kind of like it becomes the connective tissue, like kind of the beginning of my lore brain, where it's like, oh yes, like I know this tool, I will use this tool in this game, and like kind of mythologize it in a way that's, you know, it builds on my World War II gaming in that kind of way. Let's see. So that's PCs. I think around this time, I am also starting to pick up, I guess we're probably like 360 era now, I think. So in the lead up, or just after, it must have been in the lead up. In the lead up to the 360, we're deep in the days of smaller local bookstores that have magazine stands filled with gaming magazines. And I ended up getting a subscription to Game Informer, and then also a sub to the Official Xbox Magazine. And in the Official Xbox Magazine, I learn about a little video game that you may have heard of, and it's called Mass Effect. And I actually need to go and try to find if there is a version of this magazine somewhere that I can get. I think the Video Game History Foundation has been scanning them, and this is from like 2006, 2007, so I imagine there are plenty of copies. This is kind of an artifact that I reference in my mind a lot that I kind of wish that I just had a copy of, so maybe I should do that. But there is a article, like a preview of this, the new hotness from BioWare called Mass Effect. And it's exclusively the concept art. Like we're not even looking at screenshots or anything yet. It's all concept art, and it's an interview about what they want the game to be and kind of some of the ideas they have. And the thing that sticks out to me is something that has never made it into any Mass Effect game. I think it's like probably a thing they have talked about putting in the next Mass Effect game. But it's the concept that as you play the game and, you know, do some shooting and progress through, your armor will get dirty and you will be able to, in the Normandy, you'll be able to go back and you'll be able to wash it. Which just seemed like it's such a weird thing to grasp onto, you know, 15 or 10 years, 20 years later now. But it's something that has always stuck with me as like a really cool concept of the way that like gameplay is not just, you know, hold left trigger, pull right trigger. It can be something different than that. It can be bigger than that. It can be like more creative and just weird. So I like remember that. I stick with that a lot, and I should probably go back and get a copy of it. And that means, you know, because of that, where we're talking about Mass Effect, like Mass Effect is also another one of those seminal Phil video games. I love Mass Effect. I played a shitload of Mass Effect 1. Oh, wait, hang on. I just remembered. We need to go back to the original Xbox. Okay, Logan and I have had this constant thought of, you know, we need to cover this one game. Because before the heyday of Vikings and before the big, like, jump off point of cyberpunk and all of that stuff in video games, there was Too Human. And here's the thing, I really like Too Human in retrospect. It might have been an awful game, I don't remember. I actually don't remember how far I got into it, but I remember that it was a weird, interesting third person combat game that was with cyber Vikings, and that was really neat. So I played Too Human on the original Xbox, and it was a grand experience, and I wish that everyone could play Too Human, because it is a silly game, and it has like so much lore about the game itself, hilariously, as I drive to the state of Rhode Island. But yeah, I played Too Human, and it was like a fun, like, check out this weird thing that they made. I also, now that I think about it, this is also where I started playing the Fable games. So I played Fable 1 and 2, I think, on the OG Xbox, and then when I got a 360, I ended up playing Fable 3, and I loved all of those. You can kind of start to see the thread of character-based story action games that I start digging into. I guess let's jump back to, I guess, the Xbox 360 is where we're going next. I did not get a PlayStation 3. The PlayStation 2 was kind of the beginning and the end of my time with PlayStation until much later. And then from then on, I was kind of just a Microsoft guy. I ran with the 360, then I got the Xbox One, and then the Series X. And then it was right before the Series X that I ended up getting the PlayStation 4. So the 360, I think for a lot of people, especially me, was the formative video game experience. So I never had a DS. So my primary gaming console was the Xbox 360, with the blue, with the blue kind of like pinstriped faceplate. Remember faceplates? And so I got the 360, and I don't think I got any games for it right away. Like, if from what I recall, my Xbox 360 first experience was the was Hexen. Played a lot of Hexen, Hexen HD, because it was, I think that was the pre-pack game that was just the Xbox arcade thing on there. And then I played a lot of, well, I guess we'll get to that. The kind of the next bit, we're still in the rental phase. So I rented a bunch of different games for the 360. The one that kind of sticks out to me is a game that I don't think anyone has thought of since 2009. And that is The Outfit, which is, I think, maybe one of the last World War II games I ever played. And that was like a mercenaries style game, but in World War II. I rented it for a weekend, and that was kind of my first Xbox game. I think I played a little bit of Cameo at the time, but that was kind of like the one. And then seminal video game number 3 or 4, depending on how you count, The Elder Scrolls IV: Oblivion. Oblivion. What do you say about Oblivion? Oblivion is a fantastic game. As a person whose first Elder Scrolls game was Oblivion, I have almost nothing bad to say about Oblivion. It is wholly a game of its time. But holy cow, I love Oblivion so much. I put in over 220 hours into at least one save, and then I think I had another save that was around like 50 to 100. I love that game so much. Oblivion is still the only game, I think, on my Xbox, or kind of ever, that I have got the 1,000 out of 1,000 achievement points. And it's kind of part of the reason why I kind of don't achievement hunt anymore. Because it, you know, at this point, it's been there for so long, it might as well stay there. I loved Oblivion. I still love Oblivion. You will most likely hear some references to it in a bunch of my stuff. I think about a lot of the characters in that game a lot, specifically. And hey, TMI, but sometimes when I'm sitting in my good old therapy session, I do think about Ongar the World Weary a lot. The fence up in Bruma, because I feel like calling oneself the World Weary is an incredible choice. I kind of just spent so much time in that game running around and playing the story and collecting all of the armor, and I think that this combined with KOTOR is, and Mass Effect to some degree, is the origins of another like major gaming behavior that I have, which is I kind of play a lot of these video games for the fashion, which is a topic that I kind of want to dig into separately, either in a video project or another episode of Point to Point. But I approach a lot of RPG games, and like one of the big draws to an RPG for me is the fashion. Being able to like customize your armor and like pick different pieces and all of that stuff. And it's also been some of the reason that I've bounced off games, because the fashion choices were bad or there weren't any. This is weirdly one of the reasons that I had not stuck with any of the early Final Fantasy games, because for the longest time you would add armor, but you wouldn't end up being able to change what your appearance is. And that always bummed me out. So I just like, well, if I get this cool looking armor, but I don't get to wear it, like that's not fun. And that's one of the reasons I end up leaving. You know, there are other reasons, but, as you can tell in my gaming history up to this point, there is not a turn-based RPG. But yeah, so I played a shitload of Oblivion. I still love that game. Oblivion is also one of the beautiful games that I don't remember how this happened. But Oblivion is one of the beautiful games that I still have my cloud saves for. So every once in a while, I will boot up my nostalgic Oblivion save and just see what's up in my house and see what's going on in there, because I love that game. So yeah, I played a bunch of Oblivion, and then, you know, you just have the general Xbox 360 fare. But kind of like the rest of my consoles, I never really owned a ton of games that stood out to me. Like, I think for each of the consoles, I had probably less than 10 games. We didn't make a point to purchase a lot of them, because, you know, this is mostly like a me hobby. It was not something that I really shared with my family or my parents or anything. So it was kind of a thing that I only did a little bit. You know, only got a few here or there. But I ended up having a really good time with Oblivion. And then I kind of, at that point, let's see, Xbox 360, yes, this is what happened. So, so I got the Xbox. I got the Xbox 360. I played all my video games on the 360. And then around this time, my littlest sister also wanted to play some 360 games. And she was, I think, like 7 or 8, like not very old. There was a major problem in that she really liked playing the Lego games, and they got a good old bargain bin video game of the Lego Indiana Jones and Kung Fu Panda combo pack. And this is probably where I will end part one of the gaming history. And got the combo pack. And what happened was, I don't know why this is the case. I still kind of try not to blame her for this, but it is a thing that I blame her for a little bit. While I was away, I was like traveling, or like, I don't know, I was like in school or something. She wanted to play Kung Fu Panda, and that's fine. And hopped in my room, played Kung Fu Panda, and I returned home so excited to play probably Oblivion, but who knows. And I came home to my Xbox 360, and everyone real sheepish about the state of the 360. And I go in there and I turn that bad boy on to go have a blasty blast in whatever foreign world I'm about to go into. Guess what? It's the dreaded Red Ring. Somehow Kung Fu Panda, the DreamWorks movie tie-in game, red-ringed my Xbox 360. And that was kind of it, you know? Like, Xboxes were expensive, and I never really... At that point, I got a compact laptop that, you know, that's where I played Generals and some of the other stuff, but I never ended up getting another 360. I ended up just kind of playing that for the longest time, and then I got that laptop, and that was kind of it. I remember I think we ended up getting another 360 when I moved into college, and that's when we were playing, like, oh boy, that's when we were playing stuff like, I played Hawks, which was good. I played we have not touched on SOCOM or Ace Combat or End War yet, which will be things that we will come back to. The halcyon days of good old the halcyon days of microphone games. I love me a microphone game. But yeah, so I played stuff there, and my roommate Nick, our composer actually, he got Skyrim. So Nick got super deep into Skyrim, a game that I have still not spent more than 2 hours in the multitude versions of that game that I own. That was kind of the end of my 360 era. And then after that, I never really came back to it. So I ended up playing that stuff in the 360, and then I took 3 years off, because I was in college. I took a couple of years off, and then came back in 2017 with the Xbox One. But I think I will leave you there because I am actively trying to find a parking spot in this parking ramp now. And just kind of a little bit of a tease, maybe we'll come back and we'll talk about the good old days of Ace Combat and SOCOM and all of that stuff. But I will tease you with one last seminal Phil game that we will talk about. And it is, prepare yourself, BioShock. We'll talk about BioShock in my college days because I have a lot to say on BioShock, and I'm sure that it will become a larger topic in the future. But yeah, I'll leave you here. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks for hanging out with me on this very long drive. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you do, let me know. And if you have like other topics that you want to hear me chit chat about, hop into the Discord. The links are in the show notes, the links to the website, all of that stuff. This has been really fun. I have not talked about this kind of publicly, and it's kind of nice to go back and reminisce about some of my favorite things that I honestly have not thought a lot about in a long time. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye!